Hello and welcome to episode 398 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. I'm Ben Olson. With me is Nathan Fox. We're the co-founders of LSATdemon.com and the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. You can be LSAT famous. Just share news and ask questions on our website. That's thinkinglsat.com. This is going to air on Monday, April 17th. And if you're catching this in the morning, I don't even know when it comes out on Monday, but I'm going to be teaching a class today at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's a reading comp class. You can sign up at lsat.link/Ben. You just need a Demon free account, so you don't need to pay anything. It's a free class. I hope to see you there.
Yeah, not too late. People can probably see a recording of that too, can't they?
Yeah, they certainly can. If they go to lsatdemon.com/classes and just search for me, search for Ben, or go to Monday, April 17th, and you will find it.
Yeah, just scroll up and see the most recent stuff that's available. You can always do that at lsatdemon.com/classes.
Yep.
Deadlines to worry about? Oh, I guess we do have to talk about it now. The June 2023 registration has a deadline of April 25th. So if you're hearing this somewhere close to the launch date, you've got about a week to decide whether you're going to register for the June LSAT. It's really a pretty simple calculus. Are you happy with your practice test scores? Then go ahead and register. Are you unhappy with your practice test scores? Then don't register. If it's somewhere in between, then it's somewhere in between. And we can't really give you specific advice if you're 3 or 5 or 7 points away. We don't really know what to tell you. But if your practice tests are good, then there's no reason not to register and go ahead and take the test. If your practice tests are bad, then you should not take the test. That would be foolish of you. I guess it's also the deadline. The registration deadline is also the deadline to push, right? You can cancel or push with no charge up to
That's
the registration
right.
deadline.
Up to the registration deadline. So if you're not ready for June, yet you're already registered, go ahead and push it up to the next test, which is August.
Yeah. And you'll be happy you did that. It's really just a pretty tragic mistake for people to throw $210 or whatever it is down the toilet and one of their 3 attempts per cycle, 5 attempts in 5 years. And we see people just wasting these attempts all the time when their practice tests don't indicate that they're ready, or their practice tests do indicate that they're not ready. And then they just take the test anyway. It's just crazy. So just no problem with pushing. You're crazy not to push if you're not ready.
Well, and you talk about the $210, but that attempt could be worth astronomically more depending on how many attempts you've already had, right, on record. So if you have 3 attempts on record and you waste your 4th attempt, that could be thousands of dollars that you're now giving up because you're not allowing yourself to really get the best score you could possibly get.
Yeah. Scores for the April test will be out on May 3rd. And the reason why I mention that is because I'm hoping that some of you will apply to work with us on May 3rd. We are hiring for teachers and for Ask Button writers. We need a 170 something on an official test. 180 also works, but 170 something is the minimum threshold. And you can come teach classes for us, or if you're shy and you want to just write explanations, we do need people to help with our Ask Button. You can just email help@lsatdemon.com if you're interested in working with us. We've had people tell us that it's the best place they've ever worked, and we only hire our own students and listeners. So we would love to have you if you get the right score, which I know a ton of you will on every score release date. We have a ton of people reporting that they have crushed the LSAT. So hope you can come join us.
Yeah, please do. We have this first email here from Michael. It says, "Hey, thought you would find this interesting and maybe worthwhile to share, considering many have big law aspirations." Then Michael links to an article on Legal Cheek. What's the title of this article?
The title is "You Are Online 24/7. Paul Hastings Associate Goes Viral with List of Non-Negotiable Expectations."
Okay.
The U.S. firm, though, says that the presentation slide, which surfaced online, does not reflect the views of the firm or its partners. But we have the slide, and we're going to read it to you.
Yeah, we have the slide. I guess I'll go ahead and read it. This is a PowerPoint slide. It has Paul Hastings logo in the bottom right corner, and the title of the slide is Non-Negotiable Expectations.
And it says that the senior associate who prepared this is understood to have been delivering a presentation to junior colleagues on what they can expect in their dealings with clients. Hey, how big is Paul Hastings? I mean, this is one of the big law firms, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how big it is relative to the bigs.
It's a global law firm. Let's see. Wikipedia.
Makes it pretty big.
Global law firm that represents a client base in finance, M&A, private equity, and litigation. The firm specializes in white collar and government disputes, energy, infrastructure, and intellectual property. Paul Hastings has been ranked on the American Lawyers A list for 11 consecutive years. The firm revenue in 2021 was $1.31 billion.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So this is real big time law firm. Oh, here we go. List of largest law firms by profits per partner, which is what they care about. Okay. So it's 14th in the world, it looks like. Profits per equity partner. There are 177 equity partners. Each of those equity partners in 2021, 2022, made $4.73 million. There are bigger firms out there. Kirkland and Ellis has more partners. Gibson Dunn has more partners. Latham has more partners. Skadden. There's a bunch of them that are bigger, but this is a very big law firm. And it's as far as like equity per partner or profit per partner, it's right there in the middle. This looks extremely representative to me of other big law firms. I guess Listeners can correct me. Just go to our website and make comments if you want to talk about Hastings, Paul Hastings law firm specifically.
Okay.
But here's the here's what you go through in a training, at least one training, if you are a Paul Hastings junior associate right out of law school. So this is, you know, and this is the dream, right? For many, many, especially K through JDs, they're like, oh, I'm going to go make big money in law. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're going to make big money in law, this is what your life is going to be like.
Yeah. So you show up and you go to this meeting, and non-negotiable expectation number one is PH, Paul Hastings, is an Am Law 20 law firm. You're in the big leagues, comma, which is a privilege, comma, act like it.
They're just kind of setting the tone with that one. That's just like a rah-rah, hey, we're Paul Hastings. Well, you know, but make no mistake, you should be happy to be here. Not we're happy to have you.
Yeah.
You're in the big leagues. This is a privilege. Act like it's a privilege. And here are nine more numbered points.
Yeah, I want to be a little bit of an asshole here because this guy's going to be an asshole. That was a run-on sentence. So you're in the big leagues? Okay, buddy, step it up. Number two is we're in the business of client service. And client
that's
service
bolded and underlined.
Yeah. Bolded and underlined. Okay, which is fair. That's a fact. That's true. You are the concierge at the Four Seasons, a waiter at Alinea. I don't know that restaurant.
Me either.
The client always comes first and is always right. If a client wants a mountain moved, we move it. No questions.
Then there's a sub bullet underneath that point.
One sub bullet. I would hate this slide. It looks just like the formatting is horrible. As a junior, your quote clients are the associates and partners on the deal team. Okay. So yeah, you are at the bottom. Don't forget that, but be happy that you are here.
So this isn't even litigation, by the way. Like, people think that litigation is where the high pressure, high stress, you know, like 24/7 comes in.
Yeah.
No, like don't be naive like me. I went to law school thinking, well, you know, I don't really want to do litigation. I think I'm going to be more on like the business side. I'm going to do more like transactional work, which I didn't even have any fucking clue what that meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what that means at Paul Hastings is you're going to be the bitch of the associates and the partners who are on the deal team. And you're just going to be their concierge. You know, you're going to be waiting on them to move mountains for them.
Yeah.
Even though you're not part of the team.
Yeah.
Awesome. Number three.
Bold and underline. You are, quote, online 24/7. No exceptions, no excuses.
There you have it. Yeah, it's not just an 80-hour work week. I mean, it's an 80-hour work week so that you can bill 50 or 60 hours a week, but it's also constant availability all the time.
Yeah, you're on call always.
Yeah.
So that you can work 80 hours, so then you can turn around and bill 50. That's...
It's like an 80-hour work week, but you don't even get to choose the hours or know what the hours are in advance. It's like, it'd be bad enough if you were working 16-hour workdays, like on a schedule.
Yeah.
But instead, it's like, no, your phone is always on. And if there's shit that needs to be done, you're doing it right now.
Yep.
Always.
Always. Okay, number four, timelines, quality, colon. Clients expect everything to be done perfectly and delivered yesterday.
Bold and underlined on both perfectly and yesterday, by the way.
Yeah.
And again, your clients are not just the actual clients, but they are the associates and partners on the deal team. If you are one of these poor junior associates.
And by the way, these associates are getting yelled at by the partners. So the associates are going to immediately turn around and dish that out to you, right? They need you to deliver so they can deliver.
Perfectly yesterday. Yep.
Yep. Number five, someone is paying $850 plus for 1 hour of your time. Think about that in everything you do. All communication and work product needs to be prompt, professional, and polished.
This dude forgot the serial comma there after professional. There's several other typos earlier in the slide.
This guy also uses double spaces after every period. Definitely old school. But the serial comma is one I'm going to take issue with, especially in transactional drafting. This has been hashed over by the experts, and it's going to create confusion. And as a transactional drafter, you shouldn't fuck this up. So please, we're looking for perfection here.
Yeah, we're looking for perfection. Also, why are you using bold and underlined sometimes, but other times, like on this one, the someone is paying $850 plus for 1 hour of your time. That's underlined, but it's not bolded.
It's the one that's, oh no, there's two that are slightly less important than apparently the other things.
It seems like this guy was pissed off when he wrote this.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine that this is an associate who is like stuck forever in associate land, right? Like somebody who didn't make partner, but they're like training the juniors and they're mad about the juniors whining. Like they want to just make sure
you don't know how fucking hard it is.
Well, it's like hazing, right? It's like, we want you to wash out right now. Like, please quit right now. Today is the day that you should quit your job, because this is what the job is. And if you can't, if you can't handle it, you got to sack up and do this. Cause otherwise, you know, you're just not going to make it here at Paul Hastings. I also didn't make it here at Paul Hastings, but that's not material. Yes, I'm doing training for the juniors instead of like doing actual legal work. But,
I don't know what a run-on sentence is, and I don't know what a serial comma is.
Well, I just think because this was going down the chain,
yeah,
he didn't make it perfect.
He didn't give a fuck, yeah.
He's like, this is going for the peons. I don't give a fuck what this looks like.
Yeah.
All
it's
right,
funny, though.
One.
Well, take a look at this, too. After client service, right, it's underlined, and the underline continues. It just looks, it's just bad.
Yeah, it's sloppy. I really think that he was mad. He was angry when he did it. And it shows.
Yep. So number six says, take ownership of everything you do. Okay. Once you touch a document / work stream, you own every mistake in it, / fair or not.
Spaces around the / too, which pisses me off.
I know you hate that.
That's not right, is it?
I don't care as long as you're consistent. I don't know if there's a rule on that, but... Yeah.
I don't even think that's an / I think it might be an /
I think you're right. I was going to correct myself there. It's an / because it's shorter.
Yeah.
Oh,
it looks gross.
The next one's got three spaces after the period. That's a little messed up.
Oof.
It's number seven is WFH, which is work from home, is a luxury. Don't take advantage of it. Buy a full home setup. And this is apparently two monitors, docking station, keyboard slash mouse. I'm missing the serial comma again. And a working phone, or come into the office. No poor connections, no excuses. See rules numbers 3 and 5.
You know that they're, you know the guy's pissed when he's referring to the previous, you know, it's like rule 1, the client is always right. Rule 2, see rule number 1. That's how you know that he was just angry when he was doing it.
Rule number 3, don't talk back to me and I'm going to say that again. Yeah.
You know, I want to probably agree though. I mean, I can't imagine stomaching very much like, well, I was working from home and my internet dropped out during my client meeting. It's like, well, that is why we have an office. And, you know, like in the modern world, if you're going to work from home, I can see how you do need to take responsibility for your connection. Otherwise, you're not actually connected enough to be working from home. So, I mean, I'm not mad about that one. In the whole list, though, they accumulate to have a certain,
you know, I'm not
tone.
Really mad about hardly any of these. The reality, I'm taking issue with the style, which reveals that I'm not taking issue with the content because look, these kids are coming out of school and they're making a shit ton of money. And it's like, do you want to step up and do this job? That's what we're paying you for or not? You don't have to. You can leave. There's nothing, you know. This is the terms of our agreement. If you don't like it, that's fine. Someone else will.
And as much as the, you know, partners at Paul Hastings have disavowed this document, I'm not surprised by anything in here. Like, this is exactly what I've heard of from every big law lawyer I've ever talked to. I mean, this is what it's like inside these big firms. So if you think you're going to make, you know, you're going to, oh, I'm going to make $180,000, $190,000, $200,000 right out of law school. Okay, well, just, that's fine, but just understand that you're going to be online 24/7 with these kinds of expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number eight.
No questions until you've tried to figure something out for yourself. Parentheses, Google unfamiliar concepts, search the DMS, read statutes, read the instructions, etc. Still can't figure out the answer? ? Talk to your classmates.
Wow. I mean, that's where the LSAT is like really good training for being a lawyer. You do have to figure shit out yourself on the test. It's not tips and tricks and like memorization and magic that is going to help you to like decode arcane shit. It's just, you have to read everything. You have to read every goddamn word very carefully, and then you should be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, people who can score 170 something are people who can just take unfamiliar documents and figure them out. You know, like, are you good at and do you enjoy figuring out the rules for a brand new board game? Because if not, you're not going to like this kind of work.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to be the one person in your friend group who is like capable of taking the rules and reading them and getting the game going. If that's not you, then I don't think this is I don't think you want to be doing this kind of work.
Yeah. Number 9 is, I don't know is never an acceptable answer. See rules 6 and 8.
So figure it out for yourself. And if you still don't know, figure it out for yourself.
Yep.
Like, don't push it up the chain. Don't be looking to your seniors to help you answer questions. You're supposed to answer all the questions and then send up perfect work to the person above you.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, then you're not going to rise up in the firm.
No, you're not. Up and out. Number 10, this is your, and your is all capitalized, but not bolded or underlined. This is your career. Embrace that reality and always put your best foot forward. If not for the firm, which is oddly capitalized.
Trump case. Yeah.
Yeah. Or your deal team, for yourself. At the end of the day, it's your reputation that will carry you. Whether that's here or in-house or elsewhere, make it count.
He's just straight. He's like, you're probably not going to end up here because it's up or out. And we don't let very many people go up. So most people go out.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, this is your reputation that's on the line always. It's like never our reputation. It's your reputation. And you fuck something up, you're going to be gone.
I mean, obviously the tone of this is a little direct, but I think that's also how it works in these firms. And if you're not direct, people won't get it. And then they'll end, more of them will end up having to leave. So I don't know. People are, I guess, upset about this.
It created a kerfuffle a little bit. And Hastings had to go in and, like, you know, falsely disavow that this is the reality at the firm. But I think the truth is that this is the reality at pretty much all giant law firms. Like, how do partners make multi-million dollars per year? You know, 170 whatever partners that are all making $5 million a year.
And they're paying the youngest associates 200, but you're paying everyone in between anywhere from 200 to a million. I mean, of counsel, it could be making 500, 600,000. So it's not like their staff is cheap.
No, but they are relatively cheap to the share that the partners get. And so the way these firms work, they're structured like a pyramid. And, you know, they bill out all the lower underlings at exorbitant, huge rates, and they only pay those underlings a small fraction of those rates. The partners are the ones who are soaking up the profits of the firm. And then only the true superstars are going to rise in the firm. Everybody else is going to just give their blood, sweat, and tears 24/7 for as long as they're at the firm. And then they're going to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's just how big law works. So that's why it's so miserable. And we've talked about it a lot on the show before. But we still see, you know, crop after crop every single year. We've got like thousands of these starry eyed young folks who are going to go strike it rich in big law. And we just want to make sure that, you know, have some idea what you're getting yourself into, because to me, it seems just like a miserable life.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Ben and I could definitely be big law lawyers if we wanted to. And if LSAT Demon went away, what are the odds that either of us would go into law practice? Like zero.
Zero. Yeah. We would look for an alternative path.
Okay. Enough of that.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for sending that in. Interesting to read. Kind of fun to tear apart the style there a little bit. This next email here is from Braden. The subject is conditional scholarships mentioned in episode 397.
Hello. In episode 397, listener Nikki mentioned offers and conditional scholarships. Do certain schools only give conditional scholarships? Will that be specified in the offer? Do certain schools subscribe to a conditional only format? That's the same question you just asked. Can these conditions be negotiated? Praise the demon. Thanks, Braden. Well, I don't think you need to care about that. You can look at the 509 report to see if a school offers conditional scholarships and how many of those conditional scholarships have been taken away over the past few years. And that's what, but what you should be concerned about is what offer do you get? I mean, they're going to offer you a scholarship that either does or does not come with conditions. If they do offer you a scholarship that comes with conditions, then you need to be really interested in those conditions. And you should talk to them about the conditions. Well, maybe not talk to them about the conditions. Talk to a random 2L at their school about those conditions. Not the one that they gave you, but find a random 2L or 3L at that school and ask them about the conditions. Or just ask online. Look at the 509 report and see how many, you know, what percentage of these scholarships are being taken away every year. Can the conditions be negotiated? Yes, they can in some cases. I think mostly they're going to say no, but you can always ask. And when they say no, you can ask again. You can say, can I come sit and talk to you about some concerns I have about this offer, which they have a real hard time saying no to. Who knows?
Well, this is... Yeah. So you can find that 509 report by going to lsatdemon.com/scholarships. And you just go to whatever school you've been accepted at and you can click on the 509 right there. But this is why, right, Nathan, this is why we tell people to apply so broadly.
Right.
Because you can go down these rabbit holes with these conditional scholarships. And if you're seriously considering some schools and it looks like it might be a good offer, except for the conditional nature of the scholarship, well, then you should understand that nature. But there also are going to be situations where you get a full ride to some other school that's not conditional. So you never even need to like entertain this conditional scholarship and figure it out. So apply broadly, apply early, apply with your best LSAT score. And so many of these things never become an issue.
Yeah. Are there some schools that only give conditional scholarships? Maybe.
Sure.
But I don't think it matters to you because you're only going to get one offer and it's either going to be conditional or not. One offer per school. You absolutely, though, could try to negotiate, even if they only do give conditional scholarships. You know, lawyers go around getting special treatment for their clients.
I like the question that you always ask, which is, has this ever happened before? Right? Because when people say we don't do that, right? Well, have you ever made an exception?
You're giving me credit for that? I'll take credit for that. But that was
you
new
always
to me.
Ask it.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'm a genius.
I'm getting that from you. At least I think I am.
We do kind of share a brain now. So maybe I do like that. I love it, man. When I hear students say, I just recently was talking to a student who was trying to get into some special housing situation and they were like on a wait list that was over a year long.
Oh, wow.
And they asked the school like, hey, can you help me out with this? Is there any way that I can blah, blah, blah? And they said no.
Yep.
But then a week later, they went back and they appealed it to a higher. They said, can I talk to management about this? Or I don't know how they exactly did it, but they appealed it to management at the university. Mm. And next thing you know, they're getting launched to the top of the waiting list for this special housing situation.
Yeah.
And it's like, that to me is the most lawyerly thing you could possibly do, to not take no for an answer, to continue to ask. You know, you don't have to be a complete dick about it, but you do have to be a little bit like pushy. You've got to be willing to just ask and ask again and ask again. I mean, like, unless you're rude about it, they're not going to like take away your offer at that school. Eventually, they're going to come back with a hard no. And, you know, but until they do, yeah, you can always ask questions like, well, has this ever happened at your have you ever moved anybody up to the top of the list? Or can I talk to anyone else about this?
Well, and this just makes me think again about the power of applying broadly, because if you have other options in your back pocket, it makes it so much easier to be that guy who's saying, hey, have you ever made exceptions? Because you know, at the end of the day, if they're not going to give it to you, you're going to walk away anyway. So you have nothing to lose. And in fact, they're the ones who stand to benefit by changing their policy. And if they're not going to do it, then fine.
Thank you, Braden. You want to move on to this next one? This is from Josway.
Josway says, hey, with a hand wave emoji, what are good reasons to like a law school? Thanks.
Concise. I love that. Yeah. What are good reasons to like a law school? Scholarships. If you can go for free, then it makes it a hell of a lot safer deal. So, you know, if the price is right, that's a good reason to like the school.
Yeah, I don't think that law schools don't offer any value. They clearly give you something. The problem right now is that they're wildly overpriced. That's the fundamental problem. So if you are interested in practicing law and you want to learn about law and you can go for free, then that value proposition is astronomically better than it is for anyone who's paying full price or anything close to full price. And so then it becomes, I think, a good option if you want to practice law. If you don't, I don't really see the value of going to law school.
Yeah, to me, I think all law schools are pretty much the same. I mean, you're going to take the exact same doctrinal classes. They're all going to have clinics and externships and whatever bullshit. That just seems to me like the same shit in a different box. I think that if you're interested in big law, then you definitely need to look at their big law placement. I mean, you know, like, because it does drop off pretty dramatically between, you know, the top 14 and when you get down to like 30th in the country, there's a precipitous drop off in what percentage of the class is going to be able to get a big law job. And so if you were listening to what the whole Paul Hastings thing at the top of the show, if you were listening to that and you were like, yep, Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. That's exactly what I'm expecting. Love it. Can't wait. You know, if that was you and you are going to law school because you think you're going to make $180,000 plus right out of law school, that requires going into big law. And well, then that requires big law placement. That's not to say that you can't go to a school with very little big law placement and still go into big law, because, you know, the valedictorian of Southwestern Law School does frequently have opportunities to go right into big law. But you got to be like the valedictorian at a school like that. And so not everybody's going to be the valedictorian. So you do want to kind of think about, okay, you know, where am I going to be able to place in my class at this school? And is that going to get me where I want to go? If you're not interested in big law, then I don't think you should be looking at big law placement at all.
And where I don't want this question going is, oh, they have this clinic or they have that clinic. Like, law schools like to sell you on things that have zero value, which distracts you from the thing that matters most, which is the price.
Yeah, it's like the Michael Pollan thing of Michael Pollan is always saying, eat food, mostly plants. And he also says, don't eat food that makes health claims.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because, you know, broccoli does not make a health claim. Broccoli is just broccoli. It doesn't have a package on it or a label on it. It's just broccoli and it's good for you. Yeah. And it doesn't, I don't give a fuck how good that protein shake says it is for you. It's not better for you than broccoli. And the glossy brochures that the schools put out, the fancy websites, and they're just going on and on. Like Hastings, my alma mater, UC Hastings, San Francisco, UC Law San Francisco, sorry, that school, they've long had this Hastings to Haiti program, and they make a big fucking deal about Hastings to Haiti. And then you get there and you're in a class of 500 1Ls and you realize that there's three 1Ls that are going to be able to go to Haiti.
Yeah.
And it, shit like that is just like, okay, so don't listen to the schools at all. You know, they're telling you that they have a new specialty in space law or whatever. It's like, yeah, okay. You've got one dorky clinic that is nothing elective. And it's just not a good reason to like that school. So what have we've come up so far with two, I think, which is the price and big law placement. If you're interested in big law placement, is there, are there other things? I'll say geography.
I was just going to say location, but even then I want to be hesitant, because if people let these things become more valuable than the price, they're overvaluing them in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I do think that you should probably try to practice somewhere near where you want to live.
Go to school close to where you want to practice.
Go to school. I mean, live permanently. Yeah. Like, where do you want to practice law? Like, you're building your legal career while you're in law school. I mean, you should be getting a summer job, and you should be getting internships and externships and whatever else. And you should be making contacts in the legal community. Well, it's dumb then to fly from Florida to go to law school in San Francisco with an intention of going back and practicing in New York. I mean, that's like, what are you doing? Just because you wanted to live in San Francisco, that's a bad, you know, like, don't do it as a college experience. But if you want to live in that place, if you want to build a community family law practice in that place, then that might be a good reason to like a particular law school. But again, yeah, totally. Price has got to be number one.
Yeah.
Anything else? I kind of don't think
not
so, man. Like,
other things. That's what I want to make clear.
Like,
not
the fancy law library.
Yeah.
Or some famous professor
that you're never going to see.
The things that the law school is talking about the most are probably the things that you should be interested in the least.
Yes. It's a distraction. They're trying to pull you away from the price so that you feel better about paying even just $10,000 more per year. Imagine that folly. 10 grand more per year, $30,000 at the end of your 3-year term, which is going to end up being what, $60,000?
But they have a clinic in art law.
It's not worth it. That's the point.
Yeah.
That marginal benefit is not worth it. Yeah.
Right. Because, like, would you pay $30,000 more for a car? Like, no way.
Really, 60 because you're taking out a loan to do this?
Right, right. So, yeah, people are like, it's again, it's like looking at the price in the grocery store, right? You're like, well, do I want the brand name Pinto beans or do I want the store brand Pinto beans? And they're 17 cents different. And you're actually thinking about it. But yeah. Then you don't think about it when it's $17,000 difference for law school.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And they're really not offering you much more. That's what they're so good at this. They do this every day. Yeah. They try to sell themselves. But you're getting a car that has maybe, you know, a different color. Maybe it's got a leather interior, but I don't even know if that's a good analogy. It's not that much different. That's the problem. These schools are not different from each other. But anyways, hope that helps.
Thanks,
Jasway. Yeah, this next email is from Anonymous. The subject is how to review our RC section properly. I think it's you.
This is from a Demon Live subscriber. Hi, Ben and Nathan. I currently feel very stuck in the RC section where I only have time to go through three passages when I slow down. My accuracy is not superb yet, floating around 70% to 90%. I have been at this stage for a while and really struggle to see any substantial improvement consistently. I wonder if it has something to do with the way I review my RC section. I usually watch the story time video if I got more than two or three wrong in that passage, semicolon. Side note, story time videos is one of us, me or Ben or Becca or somebody on our team, reading the passage to you and kind of explaining our way through it. So talking about how we are interpreting the passage, objecting if we can find objections to the arguments, making predictions as we read, you know, oh, based on what I've read so far, here's where I think the passage is going to go next. Demonstrating the proper kind of active reading that we want you to do. Okay, so watching the story time video, if I got more than two or three wrong, semicolon, if I only got one or two and I feel that I understand why I got them wrong there, then I would call it a day with that specific passage.
I'm concerned about both of these things. I do wonder if sometimes people watch the story time video and it's kind of like watching a movie. Like they sit back with their popcorn and they're like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. As opposed to being more proactive, saying, oh, okay, I see how they're reading this. Let me try to read the rest of it and see if I can figure out the answers on my own.
Should I start watching every story time explanation and even those questions that I got right to figure out where I lack in terms of RC competency? I feel frustrated and helpless. Thank you for the work you guys have been doing. And that is from a Demon Live subscriber. Yeah, thanks for trusting us with your LSAT prep. There's a couple more resources that it doesn't seem like you're taking advantage of. You're not mentioning our written explanations. The written explanations, I think, are more efficient than the video explanations. So you might be wasting time watching a 9-minute story time, story time of the passage, thinking that that's going to solve all your problems, when there might be a written explanation that explains exactly why the right answer is right and why the wrong answer is wrong. And if you're not using those resources, I think that's a mistake. The other thing that you might be missing is the ask button. We have an ask button. It's surprisingly, right? It like has emerged as maybe the most useful thing that the Demon offers is this ability to ask our team of tutors questions via email and get a 24-hour response. I say it frequently. If you're not sometimes using the ask button, then I know you're not reviewing properly.
There should be some gap in the explanation and your knowledge. There should be something in there. Not on every question, of course, but what? Once a section, once a test?
There's got to be something. You know, I'm not telling you have to use it every day. And please don't like use the ask button just because I told you that you should use the ask button. What I'm saying is you need to be feeling clicks. When you review, you should feel clicks like, oh shit. Yeah. Okay. I totally see it now. Man, what was I thinking with that wrong answer? I would never pick that wrong answer now. And that right answer, how did I not pick it? It's right there on the page. How did I not pick it? That's because you felt the click. And if you're not feeling that click, then that's probably an opportunity to use the ask button because I promise you, 75, 85, 95% of the time, the thing that you're missing is something just small and simple, and we can make it perfectly obvious to you.
Yeah.
You know, and so I can imagine this student sitting back watching a video. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then like moving on. Right.
Yeah.
But not, it's not really satisfying. Like you got to feel it.
Yeah. And there's, this reminds me of the, I feel like it's six questions, that you like to ask, right? It's not only why is this correct answer correct and why is this wrong answer wrong, but also what led me here, right? What, let me go back as far as I can to where this mistake originally took place. And it's not always in the answers. It's often in the passage. And it's like, how did I read it? Do I remember how I read it? Do I remember why I read it that way?
Yeah. Why did you pick it if it's wrong? Like, yeah. You understand that it's wrong now, but why did you pick it? What was it that led you to pick that answer?
Yeah.
Half the time it's going to be sloppiness. Half the time it's going to be, oh, well, I didn't really read it correctly.
Or I see the words now, but I guess I just glossed over.
I didn't read the passage correctly. I didn't read the question correctly. I didn't read the answer choice correctly, but now I get it. Now that you explained it to me. Well, I'm reminded of the Paul Hastings slide earlier, you know, this is your legal career and yeah, we'll explain it to you, but we, and that is what we do. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not mad about explaining things to you, but you eventually are going to have to get to the point where you're going to be figuring this shit out by yourself. And you just have to stop making those mistakes, the sloppiness mistakes. I think it's like a universal maxim of LSAT prep that half of your mistakes are always going to be due to sloppiness at every level. Like that's a thing that never changes.
And what is sloppiness? It's like inattention, right?
It's just you didn't read it carefully enough to figure it out. Like you settled for a wrong answer. You knew that you didn't feel very good about it. You knew that you were kind of on shaky ground when you picked that wrong answer. You couldn't have felt great about it. I mean, or you did feel great about it because you had just totally whiffed on reading it correctly. But the point is the same. I mean, these questions answer themselves if you read them carefully enough to understand what they're saying.
Yeah, I guess I agree with you. And I think that's a good insight. I'm wondering what it, like, let's get to why do people read not carefully, right? I think it comes back to inattention. Their attention is redirected towards, I gotta finish. I don't like this passage. Who knows what it is, but you gotta keep coming back. That's why we keep saying, come back to the sentence at hand. It's that focus or what your attention is directed toward.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident that this Demon Live subscriber, if they're like every other student I've ever taught, they don't feel great about only doing three passages on the reading comp. You know, I think that in their heart, they are still like 50-50 with like, well, Ben and Nathan keep telling me that I need to slow down and focus on accuracy, so I'm going to try to do that this time and see how it goes. And you know, and now they're unhappy with 70-90% accuracy on three passages. But they're still, they've got this itch to like, but I want to do the fourth passage. And maybe if I hurry, you know, the truth is you should be trying to do two perfect passages probably at this level.
Yeah.
You know, can you do two perfect passages in 35 minutes? Because if you can't, then it's like really clear that you're just not reading. I don't know. You're not getting out of it what there is to be gotten.
Yeah.
And if you keep thinking about passage four while you're doing passage three, or if you keep thinking about passage three while you're doing passage two, then yeah, that's going to lead to these mistakes. You got to start behaving like a Paul Hastings associate. Who is like gonna own it and just do perfect work.
Yeah, well, reading rule 8 again from that slide, it says no questions until you've tried to figure something out for yourself. I do think that this is a little bit what we were talking about earlier with just watching the Storytime video. That's asking questions right away. And we do want people to ask questions. We do want people to look at the explanations, but try to carry the torch a little bit further. Figure it out. Try to say, okay, I got this question wrong. Let me look a little more carefully. Let me look at the paragraph. Let me look at the answer choices again. All right, here is my reason why I think that answer is wrong now and why this answer is correct. Then look at the written explanation and then say, oh, okay, yeah, I figured it out myself. And then the written explanation confirmed that rather than it just being spoon-fed to you, right? As some people, when they're first starting, they need everything spoon-fed to them. And that's fine because they're lost enough that, hey, okay, here, see, this is the path you need to be going on. But as you get better, you got to do more and more of this yourself. Otherwise, it's not going to stick. You're always just going to depend on someone else to give you the answer.
Yeah, I want to double down. Yeah, that's, I totally agree. You need to, we're teaching you to fish, right? I mean, you ultimately are going to have to do this by yourself. We're not going to be there to haul the fish out of the river with you. You're going to have to do it on the day. So we're teaching you how to find these correct answers on your own without our explanations. So it's really not about those explanations. It's about you devoting yourself to accuracy. And, mm-hmm. you know, when someone says, oh, I'm floating around 70% to 90%, what that usually means to me is like you've gotten 90% accuracy once and you normally get 70% accuracy. I think that's the way people just kind of tend to assess their own abilities. And I got to be straight with you. If you're getting 70% on three passages, you'd be better off getting 100% on two passages. You would score higher. 70% of three is 2.1. So you're only getting passages worth of questions.
I guess I don't even care about the score because it's about the path that you're on. Right. Getting 100% on two passages is a much better path to be on for future success than even if you immediately get a higher score. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt.
You're 100% right. But that's a better reason to make the point that I was making. It was like if you do two perfect passages, I'm like, high five. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, you didn't make it to passage three. Didn't make it to passage four. I don't fucking care. You got two perfect passages. High five. You're getting it.
You're going to get there.
You'll get there. Yeah. You will get there slowly over time. You will get there because you have figured out the game. You understand how to get all the points. Great. Okay. Then if you can get all the points, then eventually you can start getting all the points more efficiently. Right. And the way you're going to get there is by dismissing wrong answers more quickly. Because you'll just be like, nah, I'm not picking that bullshit. I don't even care what the rest of that answer says. That answer is gone. After three words, you're like, nope, that's gone.
Yeah,
that's how you get to the third or fourth passages, by being so damn good at the accuracy part. So you will also score higher in the short term because two perfect passages plus two passages worth of guesses is better than three passages at 70%, or at least it's a wash.
Yeah.
And your path for the future is much, much better if you do that.
Yeah.
Hopefully that was helpful. Deben Live subscriber, ask us again in class. We would love to help.
Yep. This next one is from Anonymous. The subject is my ignorant application journey. Who is to blame? And then me in all caps.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, y'all. Pre-LSAT demon. I took the LSAT three times, totally unprepared and so ignorant about the whole application process. It was awful! Exclamation point. The most recent exam I got a 142 and I actually submitted my score and applied late in February to 8 Florida law schools. I know, idiot mistake, holding on to faith, LOL. I waited for any acceptances, and to my surprise, St. Thomas University admitted me only to reject me 2 weeks later.
Oh, God.
Wow. Oh, the dean of the school accidentally sent 18 students an erroneous acceptance letter. After crying, screaming, and all the shock settled, I was introduced to the LSAT demon. You know what? this is the best thing that happened to you. Can you imagine being accepted to St. Thomas and feeling the need to go? That would not be good. So this was a good, bad experience. It's been 2 weeks of the premium plan, and religiously listening to the podcast in my headspace has completely altered. That fake acceptance wouldn't have happened if I didn't settle and get a low ass score. I am now studying to get into the 168 to 172 range, but I do need to change my personal statement for this. Do I need to change my personal statement for this cycle? What? Okay. Your headspace is not completely changed yet. Shouldn't even be on your radar.
And the answer is yes. And you shouldn't be asking that question as if like you think you're going to get away with just recycling your old work. I mean, you have an opportunity to revise your personal statement for this next cycle.
Yes.
Because you've done cool, interesting stuff in the time since you last applied. And you're going to put even better of your best foot forward when you finally get around to drafting that personal statement in August, after you're already 100% completely done with your law school admission test.
Yep. Next question. Will law schools take my past applications into consideration for the new cycle? No, but even if they did, it does not matter.
They didn't even read your personal statement. They denied you without even reading your personal statement. You applied with a 142. You were not getting into any good law schools with that score. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you are going to transform your applications by getting, I mean, if you, you know, I know you're shooting for 168, 172, but even if you get 160, you're not even in on the same planet as you were with a 142.
You're not going to be applying to these same schools. Well, and if any of them were in the range of 160 anyways, like I said, it doesn't even matter whether they happen to peer back at your old application, because what offer do they give you, and what offer do other schools give you? That's all that's going to matter. And you don't know how schools are going to consider different things. So it doesn't just apply broadly.
Yeah. The LSAT score just makes this whole thing totally moot. Like, it's just not, you're thinking about the wrong stuff. Just keep giving the LSAT your full attention. If you're ready, apply in the next cycle. I'm not sure you're going to be ready, because 142 to 168 is a, you know, not a short putt. And so you're going to have to work at it. You might have to take the LSAT. Well, like, shit, you've only got two more attempts probably. Don't take it again until you know you're ready. Like, your practice test scores need to be where you want them before you take this again. And, but yeah, you should be able to take it two more times and apply early in whatever cycle you apply in.
Thanks for writing in, and glad you're with us. Keep going and let us know what questions you have about the LSAT, because that's how we want to help you. Producer Eric commented, at least the St. Thomas screw up wasn't as bad as Northeastern's last year. I don't remember this. Do you remember this?
I don't remember it either, but the headline, this is from October of 2022.
Yeah.
And the headline is, Northeastern's law school sent out 4,000 acceptance letters by mistake.
Wow.
More than 4,000 current and former law school applicants. Oh, yeah, I do remember this.
Oh, okay.
I do remember, because I remember Northeastern students emailing us like, hey, I'm a 2L at Northeastern, or I'm a 1L at Northeastern. And I just got accepted again.
I do remember to Northeastern. That. Now you mention it. Yeah. Okay.
And former applicants, like people who weren't even applying anymore. Okay. Yeah. That, yeah. 16 or whatever it was, is definitely not as bad as 4,000. Wow. But it is worse to send it to an actual current applicant. I mean, that's just like awful.
That's tough. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Fake.
Yeah. Ouch. All right. Next one is from Justin. Subject is law school admissions. Hey, Ben and Nathan, I recently applied to a bunch of different law schools, and the best offers include a conditional full ride at Hofstra and a non-conditional 95% reduced scholarship at Albany Law School. In addition, I have done my due diligence in negotiating the best deals possible, given that approximately half the students at Hofstra lose or have their conditional scholarships reduced each year. What would you consider to be the better deal? I'm asking because you always say go to law school for free, but Albany Law's tuition would come out to be about $10,000 for all 3 years. Is that worth having conditionality off my back? I can give a gut reaction to that without looking at the Hofstra and Albany 509s. Should I do that?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I don't love the fact that it's 50%.
Yeah, because an economist would say, oh, well, then your expected scholarship is full ride, is half of a full ride.
Yeah.
I mean, half the time you're going to lose. Well, I guess you are going to get the full ride for your first year. So the math's a little more complicated than that. But like, you know, that Hofstra deal is worth a full ride for your first year and then 50% of a full ride for your second and third years.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty substantial risk. Meanwhile, Albany is
plus living expenses, right? So you're living your life wherever you are and you're paying for this. And now you have to go on a different path if you decide to leave because you lost your conditional scholarship.
Moving expenses, that kind of thing. Yeah,
sure.
These law schools are both regional law schools. Neither of them is going to have a significant prestige advantage over the other. The deal looks way better at Albany. I would take the Albany deal. I know we keep saying don't pay for law school, but the reason why we say it that way is because it would not be nearly as catchy to say pay the minimum that you can possibly pay, but do the math on conditional scholarships and figure out what the expected value is and take the best deal. You know, that's not, it doesn't sing. So don't pay for law school means get yourself the very best deal you can possibly get.
Well, this touches on what we talked about earlier, right? Someone had asked, what are the good things about law school? And I said, it's not completely valueless. It has value. In fact, you need it if you're going to practice law. And $10,000 to me doesn't sound absurd. Still a lot of money. So I'd be very careful about spending 10 grand. But if someone said, hey, guess what? Law school has now cost $10,000 for 3 years. I'd be like, okay. Sounds like the cost of a certification.
I mean, that's what it used to cost, right? That's what it used to be. Most lawyers, law school used to be trade school. It wasn't always this like faux prestige thing.
Yeah.
It used to be, oh, you want to be a member of the bar? You want to be a practicing attorney? Okay, well, come to night school for free or for, you know, minimal dollars. And you can become an attorney by working your fucking ass off.
Yeah.
Through a very serious winnowing process, right? Because like good law schools used to kick out half the class every year.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, you know, not everybody's going to be a Navy SEAL. So you're, like people are going to wash out. And that's how it used to be when law schools, you know, really like it meant something then that if you graduated with, if you had a JD, then yeah, you were going to probably practice law. Now that's changed. The tuitions are 10 times or 100 times what they used to be. And they never fail anybody hardly.
Yeah.
And
because they want your money.
They want your money. And then you graduate with a, in many cases, you just totally worthless JD. I have a worthless JD. Ben has a worthless JD. I got a dozen friends who have worthless JDs. You know, that's really common. So, you know, you're paying $10,000 for this license to practice law. I hope you're going to actually use it. But that does seem like a better deal than this 50-50 chance of losing your full ride. That
sounds like a game, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Hope that helps. Good luck. This next email is from Nura. Hi, Ben and Nathan. I've been looking at different law school programs and want your insight on a fully online program for full-time professionals.
Love it.
I'm currently a paralegal and work fully remotely and get paid well, and I would like to keep my job during law school.
Fucking amazing. Awesome. This is how it should be. It's totally ridiculous that people are going to law school full-time. I just think it's a joke. It was a total waste of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is like, wait a second. I'm a paralegal. I actually work at a law firm and I do my job full time remote and I have extra time in my life and I want to devote it to law school. But I'm not going to fucking go to lectures during the middle of the day.
Yeah.
With a bunch of other college kids.
Yeah.
Like this is a professional certification. It's like going on, you know, the Google training site or whatever and getting certified in whatever because it's going to advance your career. This makes so much more sense than full-time law school does.
Yeah. And you're making money while you're doing it. It's great.
Yeah.
Nura continues, I don't have plans on entering big law, but I would like as much exposure to different types of law to see what I like best before I can commit to one and open my own firm one day. I also want to start a family during law school. Sounds like a lot. And want your insight on the possible outcome of these schools. Are they worth the money? Here is one example. We have a link to online JD launch at St. Mary's Law School.
Okay. Yeah, and we actually have an episode for you of the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. Neither Ben nor I was on this episode, but Jackie Gurley came on and talked to Matt Dumont about the fully online JD at St. Mary's Law. So rather than hear our speculations on it, you should go watch that episode of the podcast first. I suppose we're probably also going to speculate, though, aren't we? What's this thing cost?
Yeah, that's my first question.
You know, look at the Above the Law article and, oh no, this is, sorry, what is this? This is an article on their website.
Yeah, it's on St. Mary's University's website.
Is the price
announcing
there?
The launch. Oh, but Kelly Testy is quoted. Okay, great.
Oh, what does Kelly have to say?
Let's see here. Let me scroll down. It's at the bottom. So Kelly Testy, who is president and CEO of the Law School Admission Council, called the new program game-changing and said the first fully online, part-time, ABA-approved JD program in the nation, !
That's not a sentence.
No, it's not. Congratulations, St. Mary's University School of Law. And a cornucopia of kudos to Dean Patricia Roberts for driving this innovation forward. Okay, thanks for your rah-rah. Oh,
later she softens it to this is potentially game-changing news.
Interesting.
We need to see the price. I don't know, man. How much does it cost? Like, when you can't say, are they worth the money without telling us what the price is. Apparently,
yeah, so
you can also do it at Hawaii Law. Huh.
Frequently asked questions. Hold on.
They're going to not put that. It's not going to be on there. Right. How much does this fucking thing cost? They're not going to have that there.
Wow. Oh, last question. Where can I view tuition information about the online JD program? Online JD students will pay the current part-time tuition rate, which can be viewed on the tuition website.
So it's a lot. So we just need to look at the 509.
Yeah. Part-time. Yep.
I can't remember if the program offers, I'm gonna have to listen to that podcast again with Jackie. I can't remember if they have scholarships there or not, but I would really be interested in that a lot.
So part-time, I'm really trying to find part-time rates here.
509, part-time tuition is, yeah, $28,000 a year for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay. You know, $120,000.
It's a lot of money. I'm noticing now, I'm noticing that the part-time program at St. Mary's is actually, this is St. Mary's in Texas. Is that right? St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas. Am I looking at the right St. Mary's even?
Yeah, let me look. Yes, it is. Same
okay.
one.
Okay. So their part-time program is, more prestigious than their full-time program. They, in 2022, they only admitted 27. They had a first year class of 27 part-time students with a 50th percentile LSAT of 157. In the full-time program, it was 250 students with a 50th percentile LSAT of 153, which that might not sound like a lot, but it actually is. A 4-point difference in your median is a pretty big difference.
That is
like, the median in the part-time first, program. Huh? Yeah. The median in the part-time program is above the 75th percentile in the full-time program. So they are, you know, they've got a decently high bar for this part-time program at St. Mary's, which makes me think that it's at least as prestigious as their full-time program, except for you're going to be able to do it at home.
That's why they're able to raise their median. They're offering something that other schools haven't been able to offer yet. So people will get, are going to apply here who otherwise wouldn't apply because they can do it all from home.
Well, nowhere to go but up for St. Mary's, which is currently ranked 175th in the country. So, you know, this is just another regional law school. I do want to see where Hawaii is. Hawaii is ranked 91st in the country, which is basically no different, right? That doesn't pass the 2X rule or the 100% rule.
Yeah.
It's not a 100% difference in the rankings. So there's basically no difference in the rankings. Hawaii, no one, you know, like, you don't go to law school in Hawaii if you don't want to live in Hawaii. Yeah. And I think you don't go to law school at, well, if it's fully online though, then that changes things quite a bit.
Yeah. But I'm a little concerned about, so the price, I'm looking at the price for the Hawaii program. It's fully online. You can go anywhere as long as you have an internet connection. That's what they say on their website. Duh. But it says non-resident tuition rate is $1,900 per credit. So it's almost $2,000 per credit. If you do 30 credits in a year, that's $60,000. Are you fucking kidding me? That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, Hawaii obviously likes to protect Hawaiians and punish outsiders, which makes a lot of sense, right? Because like
still, Hawaii gets a lot is of... $1,000
per credit?
Yeah. 993.
So 30,000 a year.
Yeah.
So the part-time program is more expensive than the full-time program.
Interesting. Wait, what's the full-time program?
22,000. Well, 23,000.
Am I wrong in assuming 15 credits per semester?
Might be 14 credits per semester. But yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Price comes back to price. Get screwed. Yeah,
it comes back to price. Don't get screwed. And also go listen to Jackie's interview. That was episode 404 of the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. And we will link it in our show notes.
Okay.
This next one is from Anonymous. Hello, Ben and Nathan. I took the November 2022 LSAT when I should not have and performed poorly. Currently, thanks to LSAT Demon, I'm finally getting into the 170s on my practice exams. And I'm ready to take the April LSAT. I'm also scheduled to take the June LSAT, which will be my third and final attempt for this cycle. The next test LSAC will allow me to take is September. I thought it was August.
Yeah, I thought it reset in August as well.
I thought it resets before the August test. Are you sure it doesn't reset before the August? There is an August test this year, is there not?
I thought so.
Let me go to LSAT.link. /dates, where we have all of the dates. Oh, that's for last cycle. Click here to view the dates for the 2023-2024 cycle. Yeah, August.
Yeah, and I'm verifying that on LSAC.org. August 2023 is in the next cycle.
Yeah. So good news for you right there, Anonymous, that you can take it in August. So I'm going to apply this cycle. But what if there are some points still left on the table after the April and June exams? Should I plan on taking the September LSAT as well? August, but yeah. Do law schools look at updated LSAT scores after applying on September 1st? Yes, they will. Thank you for your help. What do you think about this?
If Anonymous truly is ready for April, then yeah, take it April, June, and August.
I don't love that they have decided in advance that they are going to apply this cycle. I think that's a dangerous decision to make.
Because it makes it so that April has to be something that they're ready for.
April and or June. Yeah. And it's just like, if you let go of when you're applying and you just focused on your practice tests, which you are already in the 170s on your practice tests. So I believe you when you say you're ready to take April. It's just, you know, our order of operations is grades first. If that ship has already sailed, then it's LSAT next. Once you're done with the LSAT, then we start thinking about applications. And then we decide whether we're going to take any of the offers that we get. And we really do that in discrete steps. I don't want you to be thinking about your applications.
Well, this podcast is going to air after the April LSAT, so it might be too late for Anonymous. But yeah, like it would be better to take June, August, and September if that's what you're really ready for, right? Because even taking the September LSAT and getting the best score on record would be.
If you've only taken it once, presumably that was in the, well, it doesn't even matter what cycle it was in. If you've only taken it once, then you can take April and June and still take August and September.
And September, yeah.
So you can take it 5 times in 5 years. So, I mean, that's probably what I would do if I really was planning on applying September 1st. Just make sure you're not thinking about your applications or worrying about your applications. Just only think about the LSAT right now.
Yep. That's the thing that's going to make the biggest difference. So don't let it be moved by anything else. Great. Yeah.
Next one's from Michael.
Yeah, Michael says, just an email from the University of Florida letting me know applications for the current cycle are still open. And the applications for the next cycle have been open for 1,820 years. Taking the April exam in a week, cold 149 to practice tests in the 99th percentile after about 8 months of studying. Thanks, fellas. Sweet. Michael.
Yeah. Michael, I hate to break it to you, but you're a dime a dozen. Like we have seen so many people going from the high 140s into the 170s. This is we never used to say this. 10 years ago, it was like, oh boy, you know, if you could improve 10 points, you'll be lucky. And now it's like, if you don't improve by 10 points, something happened and you probably should improve by 15 or 20 or 25 points. And so, you can change your life completely by going from a 149 diagnostic to this 173 or whatever Michael's got. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Applications have been open for 1,820 years because there's a typo down in the email that came from the Office of Admissions, University of Florida, Levin College of Law.
Yeah.
That says the application for fall 2024 opens on September 1st in the year 203.
I was wondering what the heck that Michael meant, but yeah, okay.
Obviously, that's going to be September 1st of 2023 when that application opens.
Yeah.
Their application deadline is July 15th. Are you kidding me?
That's crazy.
That's a pretty shitty law school there, Michael. I have no idea what they're ranked. but if a school is that desperate for applicants that they're still accepting applications in July for, you know, class that starts 6 weeks later, that tells you a lot about the prestige of the school.
Has anyone graphed ranking and application deadline?
Oh, that would be brilliant. That's perfect for our listeners to do and send it to us. And then we will give you lots of praise on the show.
Yeah.
rankings and just a little line chart, scatter chart maybe, of ranking and application deadline. Love to see that.
Yeah.
Anything else for Michael?
No, thanks for sharing that funny email. Be LSAT famous. Please ask questions or share news with us at thinkinglsat.com. Questions about the LSAT demon, you can always email help@thinklsatdemon.com. You can also check out our other podcast, LSAT Demon Daily. That was episode 398 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. Thanks all y'all for listening. Nice knowing you. Don't pay for law school.
Or pay as little as you possibly can.
Yes.
Or get as much of a stipend as you can. But see, that's all that. That's what we mean when we say, don't pay for law school.